Thank you very much, Papa Christian. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming today. I hope you had a wonderful week. And we are here again to hear from the Word of God. I was very impressed with the presentation of the children. Language at the Tower of Babel was a reason for disorder and disarray and people fighting and being scattered. But language is also a bridge that you cross on to reach other people. We are from many denominations, but we have English as a language, as a bridge that we use to reach across to each other. And we thank God for that privilege. And I pray that the bridge of English that God has given you, French, is a call to be a missionary. So all of us are missionaries. There is an American preacher who said, every Christian who is serious about mission should have a valid passport. If you are serious about mission, you should have a valid passport always with you, because God can call you to go anywhere and you will not give a lack of passport as an excuse for not going. Now, do you have a passport and a language that is a bridge? You are a global missionary. Can we clap for the children for that presentation? Great. Now, last week we began talking about the burden for the kingdom. Some of you were not here. You can go back online and listen to it. There were some issues with the sound because of the electricity blackout, but the major part of the sermon is available online. You can listen to it and be blessed. This morning we want to look, as I promised, on the book of Nehemiah. And we are going to see what keys we can learn from the life of Nehemiah that can help us build the kingdom, that can help us be better Christian, that can help us even be a blessing into our countries, our families, and everywhere. So we will be in the book of Nehemiah. It's a long book, but I'm going to give you a summary of the book of Nehemiah, and then we'll try to draw a few keys that we can take away and be able to apply in our lives. You need to know that the book of Nehemiah comes after the book of Ezra. If you read the Bible, you'll find that the book of Ezra just comes before. In the ancient Jewish books, the book of Nehemiah and the book of Ezra is one book. They are not two different books. So if you want to understand the story of Nehemiah, you have to start by reading the book of Ezra. So what I'm going to do is to give you a summary of those two books so that we can know the context in which we are reading this text today and be able to quickly draw those lessons. So when the book of Nehemiah and book of Ezra and Nehemiah, actually you can call the book of Ezra Nehemiah 1 and Nehemiah 2, or just call them Nehemiah or Ezra's or whatever. Just find one single name that put them together. Start with the children of Israel. We know that Nebuchadnezzar came and conquered Israel and took in captivity many Israelites who stayed in Babylon for many, many years. Daniel will be born there and many other people will be born there. So after about 70 years, there is a new empire that will come, the Persian Empire, with someone called Cyrus the Great as the emperor, who would conquer Babylon and establish the Persian Empire. And then he would wonder, what are all these Jews doing in my kingdom? He would give a permission. Those who want to go back to their land, they are free to go back. And that's why the book of Ezra starts with a man called Zerubbabel. If you can pronounce that, good luck. Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel, which actually means the son of Babylon, born in Babylon, would take the first group of people who are willing to go back to Israel to go and rebuild and live in back in their land. So when the book of Ezra starts, Zerubbabel starts this expedition and takes a lot of people back to Jerusalem. They get there, they find a few people who stayed back, who have married people from the Canaanites, and it's a very ugly story. Zerubbabel starts by rebuilding the temple, which has already been destroyed. They rebuild the temple. After they rebuild the temple, the glory of God does not appear. They just have a good building. but the presence of God does not come. So the book of the story of Zerubbabel ends with a disappointment. We have a better building. Imagine like Gomerville, we build this beautiful sanctuary, but there's no God. What will make a difference between this building with a hotel room with a conference venue? We can actually turn this place in a place where people have weddings. But what makes it different is that we believe that the presence of God is here. So the Israelites build the temple, but the presence of God does not appear. And then 60 years later, there comes now a man called Ezra. Ezra, who would say, okay, Zerubbabel took the same group, the first group. He takes the second wave of the Israelites back to Israel and say, God did not appear because the word was not reestablished. For him, he will come with the Torah and he will read to people the text of the Torah so that they all understand and they all make a new commitment to work according to the word. But unfortunately, the story of Ezra and the book of Ezra ends with another disappointment where they have the text, they have the text of the scriptures, but the glory of God does not appear. So now, many years later, some of the people who were disappointed with what was happening would go back, say, let's go back to Babylon. Let's go back to Persia because life here is difficult. Some of them were Nehemiah's brothers and cousins. And that's where the story of Nehemiah starts, where his cousins come back and tell him all the stories of the terrible things that are happening, how the walls are down, how the enemies are coming in and out. And the book of Nehemiah starts with Nehemiah hearing this story. And he cries before God. He goes and prays for 3 months, crying before God, saying, how can our land be this devastated? Now let's, with that in mind, I've just told you the book of Ezra and Nehemiah chapter 1. Now let's read Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1 through 8, and then we'll draw the lessons. I'm making it the story short because we are stuck on time. So while we read this Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1 through 8, have that backstory that I've just told. And this is where we're starting, where Nehemiah has heard the story of all the efforts that Zerubbabel did, that Ezra did, all the disappointment that has happened. Now it's his turn to hear the story. In chapter 1, he is heartbroken. He prays for 3 months. And now we go back to chapter 2, verse 1. We're going to read only the first 8 verses. Let's read. I'm reading from NLT. Early in the morning, spring, in the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of the king Artaxerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine. I had never before appeared sad in his presence. So the king asked me, why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled. Then I was terrified, but I replied, Lord, live the king, long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates that have been destroyed by fire. The king asked, well, how can I help you? With a prayer to God of heaven, I replied, if it pleases the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried. The king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked, how long will you be gone? When will you return? After I told him how long I would be gone, the king agreed to my request. I also said to the king, if it please the king to give me letters addressed to the governors of the province of the west of the river Euphrates, instruct them to let me travel safely through their territories on my way to Judah. And please give me a letter to address to Asaph, the manager of the king's forest, instructing him to give me timber. I will need it to make beams of gate to the temple forest for the city wall and the house for myself. And the king granted this request because the gracious hand of God was on me. That's the word of God. Now, you remember the story I've just told you? Nehemiah has been praying for 3 months. He now comes and appears before the king, sad, and the king asks him, "What's up? My city is in ruin, and I'm heartbroken." And the king asks him an important question: "How can I help you?" If God asked you, "How can I help you?" would you have an answer? Or would you formulate another prayer request? This is the king who has the power to do everything with only his signature. He can move things. He tells Nehemiah, "How can I help you?" We see here from verse 4 that Nehemiah is prepared with a strategy. He has been praying, but at the same time he has been developing a strategy so that when he appears before the king, he has something to request, something tangible, something doable that he can go out and do. And that's the story that we are going to be drawing keys for. Now, because of time, let's start drawing some of these few keys. If we want to make a difference in our generation, in this church, in this city, in our countries, we need to learn from Nehemiah the following. The first thing is a passion for the house of God. You cannot make a difference for God if you are not passionate about the things of God. It starts with that. Imagine how many people had the stories of those who came from Jerusalem and how many people thought, "Yeah, forget about that land. They are far gone. We can't help them." But the reaction of Nehemiah was to break down and pray. What is your reaction when you hear that the house of God is in trouble? What is your reaction when you hear that a brother or a sister is in trouble? That is an indication of where your passion is. Let me give you an example. If we come during the week, it's announced that Gomaville is no more. This temple, and the pastor has decided to close this place. What would be your reaction? There are some people who say, "Wow, that's wonderful. I don't have to go to church anymore. I'm on vacation. I go on leave." Even when we had COVID and we had to close the churches for 4 months, there are people, it was their best time. "I don't need to go to church and I don't need to give offering." So people felt like a burden has been taken from them. Those are not passionate about the things of God. But I remember even during COVID, there are people who would come here during the week to have their own time of God, saying, "Even when the doors are closed, I will create my own church." How many of us are passionate about the things of God that if we hear that something has happened to the kingdom, to a servant, we can feel our heart is broken? If you don't have that passion, that love for the things of God, you will not do great things for God. You need to gauge your passion. When you hear there is a project at the church, how many of us say, "Yeah, this is an opportunity for us to do something great for God"? David said, "I was glad when they said to me, 'Let us go to the house of the Lord.'" If we say there's no church next week, how many people will say, "Wow, I get to sleep in. I don't have to wake up very early"? How many people will come and quarrel the pastor, saying, "There must be service. You have to open this place"? A passion for the things of God. And when Jesus is described, even in scripture, they say the passion of the temple of God will consume him, will burn in him. If you are not passionate, you will not do things for God. The opposition is so great that it will take passion to be able to confront that opposition. You cannot create passion, but God can give it to you as a gift. God can give you passion. So if you are passionate about the things of God, if you are passionate, you remember what I said about the burden last week. That is an indication that God is giving you a gift to make a difference. If you are passionate about the country, like for me, I'm very passionate about the DRC. I need to ask myself, what gift is God giving me and what burden do I need to carry for my nation? If you are passionate about the music ministry, if you are passionate about order, if you are passionate about whatever you see God putting in your heart, it's an indication of where God is calling you. Nehemiah is passionate about the glory of the kingdom of Israel. And when he hears that there's no more glory in Israel, you remember the children of Israel had stayed in Babylon for a very long time. And what kept them was the stories of those who came in captivity, describing Jerusalem as Zion, as a place of greatness, as a place where the presence of God dwelt. Imagine growing up with that story. And then you are an adult, they tell you all that story is wrong. There's nothing as great in Jerusalem. And Nehemiah is passionate. He said, we need to restore the glory of God. If the glory of God is tarnished, how many of us will be passionate about restoring it? Passion for the house of God. Number two, we see in the life of Nehemiah a track record of service. A track record of service. What helped Nehemiah to make a difference? He was so faithful in his service to the king that when he was sad only once in the presence of the king noticed. Can you imagine? The king of a Persian emperor, how many things he has to do to take care of, and he gets to a level of noticing that a cupbearer is sad. Can your boss notice that you are sad? If you are sad every day, he can't notice because it will just be you. And if you have a temper and tantrum, you are sad, I mean, that's you, that's your nature, sadness. When you come into the office, everyone needs to adjust their smile because they don't want to appear happy in your presence. But can your coworker notice that you have a burden? We see here that Nehemiah was so faithful in his service that the king noticed that he had a problem. Can our faithfulness and excellence in service be a leverage that we can use to build a kingdom? This passion that Nehemiah have and this track record of good service exemplifies the dedication we should have as children of God to serve faithfully. And it's a track record. It was not a service only for 1 week. It was on a long time. He had a tenure of service. We need to be believers who have a tenure of service. Even unbelievers can testify. You can say anything about these guys, but I've seen this person for the last 5 years doing such and such a thing. If they ask our neighbors about us, will they say that we have a track record of faithfulness to the things we are doing? If they ask the people who live with you, will they say that you have a track record of service, of commitment in the things you do? There are some people who cannot call you every Sunday morning because it's pointless. They already know where you are. They know you are at church. It doesn't matter which day it is. They know it's a Sunday. Don't call him. He will not come. He's a church. That means you have established in the mind of your surrounding that you have a track record. There are some people who don't go to church. When they want to find you, they come on Sunday morning. They will find you in the bed. You have established a track record on what you do. Number one, passion. Number two, a track record of service. Number three, a life of integrity. A life of integrity gives what we call credibility. And now we come back to Nehemiah's request. Nehemiah is a person of integrity that when he puts his request to the king does not object and he grants him his request. Imagine, Nehemiah did not have the resources to build the kingdom. Nehemiah did not have all it took to convince all the governors, to convince all the people who had the resources. But he was connected to the king who had the power to give him the power. And Nehemiah approached him with a strategy. And because of his integrity, the king granted him. And the king gave Nehemiah 3 things that I want you to notice. One, he gave him letters, authorization, sent to all the governors in the west saying, this is Nehemiah. He is my envoy, special envoy as governor, and was given an official letter to give him the authority to act. There are some things that we cannot change in the world until we have the authority to ask, to act. Your position that you hold in your organization is an authority to ask. Your contract is an authority you've been given to act. We see here that the king gives Nehemiah that permission, that authority to act. He had prayer, he had God. But imagine if he came to those governors and say, you know what, give me way, I'm going to Judah. Where are you going? I'm going to build the kingdom. Okay, show us something. No, I have God and I have passion. They will send him back. You and your God, go back. You know, there's some doors that will never open for us as Christians unless we have the official letter, even from the secular world. That's what Nehemiah obtained. He had God, he had passion, he had the desire, but he needed to have also the authorization to work in the kingdom. That's why some of us need to be in a position where you can help the kingdom advance through signatures. And that's a mandate of dominion that the church is called to have, not only to be locked in prayer rooms, but to go out and have letters as Nehemiah did. He knew that praying was not enough. Passion was not enough. He requested specifically to the king, give me a letter that will allow me to go and make a difference. The second thing the king gives Nehemiah is access to resources. He tells him, here's a letter to the forest of the king. Go and cut all the wood you want. Imagining the richest person in the world is Elon Musk giving you a blank check. Hello, what amount can you write? And you know that he has the resources. You will write all the zeros until they fill the check thing. If you are given a blank check from the richest person, you know this person is loaded. What amount would you write? Just play with that in your mind. Let's say it's for your personal needs. Hello? If they open any of these banks here in Goma and they leave you there in the safe and say, take all you can take. How much can you take? Some of you will go and hire a lorry to carry money. There's this Ali Ndongote, the richest guy in Africa, who said that he used to be told that he was rich, and he was wondering, am I really rich? So one day he decided to go to the bank and withdrew 10 million in cash. And he withdrew, he put it in the vehicle, he got home, and he looked at the money, he said, wow, I'm really rich. Then the next day, he took the money back to the bank and said, take back the money, and he deposited the money. It's a very interesting story. So sometimes, what we need is resources. We can have the passion, we can have the desire, we can have the connections, but all of that will need resources, and we need to be connected or have access or have favor with people who have the resources. It will take resources to build this church. It will take resources to build the pastoral house we are building, to do all the pavement we need to do here, to do mission, to solve the poverty, to help orphans. All that takes resources. And I've always been heartbroken when you are in a prayer room. All of you are Christian, you are praying. Then after prayer, you call people who were not in the prayer room to help you with money to do what you prayed for. Can you imagine? People who are secular, but they have money. So you pray, but at the end of it all, you will come back to them. Because you will need the resources to move things forward. There's a lot that I could say on that, but we see that the king does not only give Nehemiah his permission, he also gives him what it takes. He gives him the resources. So if you want to make a difference, you can have the passion. You can have the authorization. But I'm telling you, it will not work if you do not have the resources. Human resources, financial resources, material resources. And the church needs to urgently solve this issue of resources without manipulating people. without lying to people, without manipulating and giving false promises to people. We need to find a way to solve these issues because it's a matter of dominion. If we do not have our own resources as churches and believers, we will always be slaves to those who have. We need to find a way to solve this. This will be a sermon for another day. The third thing that the king gives Nehemiah is time. He gives him leave and he asks, how long do you want to go? And he says, you know, he responded, but in the Bible does not specify how long. And the king gives him leave. Go and do that. You need time to make a difference. You need grace and time. How many of you would be here if there was a deadline at work? You wouldn't be here. We all need time to make a difference. If you have 10 more years to live, 20, 50 years to live, what will you do in that amount of time? Now, God has given all of us time. And we see here that the king gives Nehemiah time. And what you need to notice is that the king is giving his best servant, who is in charge of his personal security and food, his security of his food, and letting him go so that he can go and rebuild. We will stop there for the English service. The longer version of the sermon will be in the French service. We'll go through five of these. Here we've done only three. So, in summary, we learn from the book of Nehemiah that there was a time where people are passionate about God. They build physical things, but the glory of God does not appear. And if you look at the book of Nehemiah, it will also end with another disappointment. Nehemiah will rebuild the wall, but the wall, the glory of God will not appear. At the end, the people will actually go back to sin. Nehemiah will start beating people, pulling hair. And he ends the book by saying, God, these people are so terrible. Save me. You save me. Just leave them. Save me. Me as a person. I want to be saved. Just leave these guys. That's how it ends, on a very sad note. And you know what? If you look at the Bible chronologically, the book of Nehemiah is the last book of the Old Testament. Not Malachi. Chronologically, it's the last. So God would not speak again for 400 years until John the Baptist will rise to introduce Jesus. So that disappointment that ends the book of Nehemiah, where they try to build physical things, but the glory of God does not appear. There will be a silence of 400 years until we get to the New Testament, where Jesus will rise to be the ultimate portray of the glory of God. So I encourage you to develop a passion. I encourage you to have a track record of service. I encourage you to be people of integrity and build credibility. That will give you access to authorization to act. That will give you access to resources. That will give you time to make a difference. May God bless His word. Amen. He bless you. Thank you very much.